Well, I've got no presentation or anything, so I'm just going to do a very, very short thing as we want to... Well, I'd like to get a pint in tonight, so... Just very quickly, what happened about Stokes Croft and how I personally found out about it? Again, I've got to say that Stokes Croft has been part of my social life for a long time. I actually was squatting on Stokes Croft in 1984 and 85. I was involved in the social centre there. And from that experience, I certainly gained an understanding of the let's put it this way, visions for development at the time. This is 1984-85, and also the duplicity of the council. I mean, we were in a social centre in a building which I don't know whether anybody's, if you're Bristolians, you remember there was a bookshop called Full Marks Bookshop, a left wing bookshop on the corner of Cheltenham Road and Stokes Croft. There was Bristol Broadside, which is a local history group who produced stuff. There was a social centre. We were involved in a thing called the Demolition Ballroom, which put gigs on. And there was a thriving, well, I was in the thriving punk scene at the time. So that's kind of my connection. And since then, you know, obviously been to gigs and had a lot of connections with music down there anyway, over the years. So, amongst other things. So, Stokes Croft has got a connection to my life. And I certainly was quite disturbed last summer. We were doing a radical history event on Brandon Hill, which I mentioned earlier on actually, and a couple of young people came up to me and chatted to us at that event. One of them was a skateboarder who turned up, and they said pretty quickly when we were chatting that they kind of heard that the clubs on Stokes Croft were going to be closed down. So bear in mind, this is quite a long time ago. And I was like, what do you mean closed down? They said, well, you know, what, one's closing. And they would know all of them are going to close. That's what they told me. And we kind of logged it away and thought, well, we'll ignore that for the time being, you know, we've got other things to do. But then it just kept popping up everywhere. And I know that some of the people here have been involved in that. And then I heard about the People's Republic of Stokes Croft. And Chris over there, which I'm sure that's what I'll say in a minute. But, so I kind of heard about this stuff, saw the art going up, heard about these closures, and it kind of was slowly coming to public consciousness. And obviously, you know, you can't ignore the mall that's been built at the end of, you know, in town. So there's clearly development going on all over Bristol, has been for a couple of years. To me, I don't want to go on about all the ins and outs of it, because I'm not an expert. Chris is probably a lot better than me at explaining all that. But just the key points of this, like, obviously, there's a lot of development going on in Bristol. That is being driven, as far as I'm aware, and I would agree most, if an economist was standing in now, he'd say it's been driven by high property prices. So it's very important to understand that development is not something that... Suddenly the people of Bristol decide to do some development, and the council says, yes, let's do this. Not like that at all. In the 1980s, in the late 1980s, the same process was going on. Now, if you remember the late 1980s, you had, like, you know, the Spine Road being built, the Urban Development Corporation, you know, the whole Harbourside developments, and it was all, there was obviously issues about gentrification and regeneration, which I want to talk about very briefly. That was going in the late 1980s, and there was all this positive propaganda coming out of the developers. Mrs. Thatcher appoints the Urban Development Corporation head, undemocratic organisation, organising the development of Bristol. Okay, so that's, you know, undemocratic process, central government behind it, and I would argue not really for Bristolians. And so all those things going on, all this positive propaganda, it's for your common good. There was a lot of that being said. Trouble is, you get a crash in 1990, early 1990s, property prices stagnate, big economic recession, you know, stop, unemployment goes up, there's redundancies, whole process stops, pretty much. So it's really important to understand that these processes are not something that we're, even the people in the council, are that much in control of. And they're certainly not being done for our benefit. If they're being done for our benefit, they'd do it tomorrow, or they'd do it in the middle of a recession, if it was being done for our benefit. But it's been driven by high property prices, it's been driven by commercial and economic reasons, and that's really important to get grips with that. That's one thing. Second thing is, we went to a meeting, I want to talk a little bit about Old Market, I went to a meeting a few months ago where the council... one of the history groupies in Art Steeds, you may or may not know, is involved in protecting Bristol pubs, historic pubs. And he said, you know, the Gym Palace is under threat. There's other pubs in the area of Old Market. Let's go down to this council meeting and meet. You know, they've got a council. I said, okay, I'll meet you there. Went down there. There weren't very many people there. The council were there. But what was really interesting about this consultation meeting that was going on was the panic that I gathered from the council representatives that were there. And it seemed to me that they were desperately trying to set conservation areas up, okay, in Old Market. And I thought, this is kind of strange, you know, I mean, you thought that, you know, council would have an angle on or a handle on what's going on in Old Market. And they did the same thing in Stokes Croft. But what I gathered from the meeting, from what, you know, certainly what I heard, was that the council were kind of panicking because they thought lots of stuff was just going to be knocked down. Now, they had a map of the listed buildings in Old Market, and, you know, they were marked red. But what was clear was is that, you know, a listed building obviously got some kind of protection. They were desperately trying to set conservation up to protect it, because they were worried it was going to be wiped out, or large areas of it that weren't listed were going to be wiped out. And their key interest in this project had nothing to do with the usage of those buildings as such in Old Market. They weren't interested in that. They were interested in protecting the facades, the buildings themselves. And they were worried. You know, they were clearly worried about, you know, losing stuff to rapid development. Same, I would argue the same thing in terms of conservation in area in Stokes Croft. They were interested in the buildings, not really in the people or the usage or the cultural assets I want to talk about very briefly now. And that's really, really important to understand. So we've got property developers being driven by economic things. We've got the council interested in kind of protecting some historic buildings.
Well, they don't much. You know, they allow a lot of things to be demolished.
Sorry?
They've allowed a lot of things to be demolished.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying I trust that they'll protect the historic buildings. I'm saying that was their angle,
yeah.
Certainly. And in that meeting in Old Market, one of the things we said was, well, you know, what about the usage of the buildings? You know, what about, you know, what they're actually, you know, we're people. You know, buildings are actually dead things, funnily enough. And, you know, what they're used for is actually quite important. I mean, you wouldn't say, oh, you know, my house is really important, you know, in itself. But, I mean, of course it's important. It's a home, you know. And a club, for example, is not just a building. It's a place where people go to hear music. And a pub is somewhere where people go to drink and be a community together. And there are many other, obviously, your community centers and other buildings. You can argue about that. They didn't really have any idea about this. This was kind of, I was amazed. I thought these people must have degrees and MAs in architecture or something, town planning. They must have some idea about this. So I said, you know, well, who have you talked to in Old Market? You know, who have you consulted? And they said, well, this is the consultation meeting. I said, well, you know, okay, that's not really a consultation. Calling a public meeting, as we all know, is not an easy experience, and you're not going to get queues of people outside the building, especially if you put it on a little sign somewhere. And we said to them, you know, well, okay. And they said, well, who should you talk to in Old Market? And I said, well, obviously, you should know. You're our representatives. But I'll tell you who you should talk to. You should start by talking to the gay community in Bristol. Because they actually use a lot of the clubs down there, and that is a kind of a gay area. And, you know, you should probably talk to those people, because those clubs will probably disappear. Now, they were like, well, that's a bit of a problem, they said. And I said, well, why is that a problem? And they said, well, because a lot of people in the community are not happy about the gay community. And I said, well, you know, actually, okay, I recognise that, but, you know, actually, bollocks. You know, you have to talk to them. You know, you have to talk to the people who use these buildings. And that's a key issue in all of this. I mean, there's been a lot of debates, if you've been watching indie media and the press and stuff, about all this stuff. But the key thing is, who is actually using the spaces, okay? If Stokes Croft was the bombed-out ruin that they've made it out to be, right, there wouldn't be a problem, would there? I mean, you could just redevelop it and it'd be fine. But it's not a bombed-out ruin. There are lots of old buildings and newer buildings that have been left to go to rot. And to give you an example, the building I was talking about where I squatted in 1984, at that time they were going to turn it to a roundabout, okay? And they threw everybody out, okay? They threw our social centre out, our cafe, our bookshop, and our gig place. They threw us out of the street. We were there for probably a year. And we had a lot of fights to stay there, but they kicked us out on the basis that it was going to be a roundabout, okay? 17 years later, that building was still empty, okay? So I don't actually, you know, from my own personal experience, I've got to say, I don't really believe, you know, these visions, okay, these visions they have, and I'm not always certain that that's exactly what's going to happen. It's certainly a long-term vision in the current economic climate. You know, property prices probably not going to survive, okay, that's an important point. So back to Stokes Croft. What's important about Stokes Croft? Well, again, I was up at the old Custom House the other day, and there was a few council people there. I chatted to them. I said, you know, Stokes Croft quite important. What, you know, don't you think you should be thinking about, you know, the people who use the place? And they said, well, who's that? And I said, well, you know, start with, you talk about music, you know, and it's got a massive, an incredible history in cultural sense in terms of Bristol. I mean, you know, Will at the back there is an expert on music, and I'm sure he could do a much better job than me. But I mean, you know, I could just run through. Well, first of all, I'd start with my scene, the punk scene, which was a vibrant, and I mean, you know, we brought Krusty to the world, so you know, that's a big culture. We brought Krusty to the world. Bristol did.
It was you, right?
Wasn't me. No, but I mean, you know, I was there, you know, to deal with it. But you know, that's, I'll start there, okay? Krusty, right? Stokes Cross, right? And you think Krusty's not important, go to Tokyo, go to Stockholm, right? You'll find it. It's there. It's a cultural asset, I would argue. That's the weakest bit of my argument, Bill. Right. The second is, you know, you've got bands like Massive Attack, and you know, Massive Attack, the World Bums, all that stuff that came down from the dugout when that was closed, one of the most important cultural clubs, if anybody remembers, in Bristol's history, was the dugout. They managed to be, you know, one of the only ones the council actually shut down up on Park Row. Very important place, create a lot of music. You know, Stokes Cross has produced a lot of music, it's produced a lot of stuff, and it's produced it because the clubs aren't really commercialised, they're not in the centre of town. They've always been open to local musicians. They've allowed access to people, whether they had, you know, Krusty or, or, you know, there was access, you know, you get in there. And, you know, one of the guys who came up to St Brandon Hill was sitting in the back over there, Sam, right, and he said to me the other day, like, he was in Patchway, and he said to me, like, you know, there's always arguments to that, but basically, what people have to understand is, I get the bus from Patchway down to Stokes Croft, it costs me £2.50 to get down there, right? I don't get off in between, right? I don't get off in between, because there is nothing in between. Where I want to go is the Croft, the Junction, and those clubs down there. That's why we come down there. So Stokes Croft is not serving as, quote, indie media, a bunch of junkies and whores, right, which is what some people are, you know, spewing out rubbish about, is actually serving a huge number of kiddies from around the town who come to that area because of its cultural importance. Like, you know, if I were about cultural assets, I'd probably say get out, but what it actually is a cultural asset. So that's important. Art, you know, Banksy, art, you know, what Chris is doing, all the other artists, International Graffiti Art Festival going on up the road at the moment. There are all these things actually happening in the area, and there's reasons why they happen there, and they are problematic as well, because people live there. So there are questions about that. Okay, I mean, it's not, you know, these are things that need to be debated in that community and sorted out. And the council should be actively facilitating that culture being there and people living there as well. Okay, that's not what they're doing. What they're doing is, they're allowing that area to be redeveloped. It's a prime bit of real estate, okay? It's right near the centre of the city, perfect for putting housing in, shops and businesses, right? That's where the money is. It's driven by the property price, that's what's going to happen. That's what they are quite happy to see happening, as long as they don't knock down all the historic buildings. That's where they're going with it, okay? Now, getting across this idea, if you talk about usage of buildings, right, with the council, you're not really standing on much firm ground legally, okay? So I would argue that, you know, what I'd like to see is the fact that a building, when, you know, let's say I'm a property developer, or somebody wants to buy some property on Stokes Croft. I go down to Stokes Croft and I buy Clockwork, okay, the club. I buy it. The point is, I haven't bought just a building. I've bought a club. Or I might go down to Eastern and try and buy the Plough, okay, which is my pub, right? But what you've actually bought is a club or a pub, right? That's what it is. And I'd like to see the council, either locally or nationally, which would be preferable, that usage of buildings is important when you buy them. There's a restriction. I can't just take a pub and go, I want flats, because I love the community. No, I'm doing it because I'm making money out of it. You shouldn't be able to do that. Everybody knows that it's much easier to turn a pub or a club into flats, you know, luxury apartments or whatever. It's much easier to do that than to take a building and turn it into a pub, okay? It doesn't work the other way around. There's much more restriction in going from building to pub, you know, through licensing and all sorts of other planning applications or music venue. It's much easier to go the other way, buy something, turn it into housing, okay? That's a very, very, that's problematic for our communities. That's why pubs are disappearing all over Bristol, and that's why they can't go the other way. You can't just set a pub up. So I'd like to see it turned on its head a little bit. I'd like to see when you buy a building, you are responsible for keeping it as a cultural asset. Okay, and that's part of buying it, right? That's part of the stipulation for buying it. Now, you call that utopian, but I don't think it is. I think it's simple. you just put the legislation in there and do it. And the reason you're doing it is because you're doing it for the community and for the people who use it. Okay. Now, a couple of last points, really, because I don't want to carry on going on, but just some important things about Stokes Croft itself is that, you know, when you talk about gentrification, right, which is again, I think is a problematic term, you know, a lot of people don't understand what it means, right? I would argue, basically, gentrification is where, for economic reasons, people come into an area which may or may not be run down, may or may not have been run down, and one of the ways you do that for the property developers is to buy the properties and leave them, okay, and wait, and then when the property price goes up, because of course you don't want to buy it when it's expensive, you buy it before, you wait, you leave it empty, you let it fall apart, a few squatters jump in, and then eventually kick everybody out and turn it into your new yuppie development, okay? But that process, that is gentrification. And the point about gentrification is it's who it's for, okay? What is the development for? What we get out of the media at the moment is all this stuff about development is good. It's good. And they even mix the terms regeneration and gentrification together. They don't like the term gentrification because it kind of says, who's it for? Who's this development for? Does it serve the community of Stokes Croft? Does it serve Bristolians? I mean, I'd love to see in the centre of town people like myself, I'd like to live on the fucking dockside, tell the truth. You know, why can't I live down there? Why can't I live there? Why can't Bristolians live down there? Well, it's simple, we all know why, because we can't afford it. That's it, basically. And fundamentally, that's a major problem. When we've argued about this in the last few months, there's been a lot of debate about it. The main thing thrown at us is that you're against regenerating areas, you're against development. That's not true. That's certainly not true. Okay, Stokes Croft clearly needs some kind of regeneration. There's plenty of empty buildings that property speculators have bought and left. There's no question about that. The question is how is that process going to happen? Who's it for? And who's going to be in control of it? Okay, and those three questions are, I would argue, completely unanswered by this council at the moment. And they're certainly not going to be answered by the property developers. Right? They're the key questions, right? How's it going to happen? Who's in control of it? And who's it for? Okay, fine. I'd love to see Stokes Croft redeveloped for the people living there at the moment, whether they are local residents, whether they are people who are drug abusers who are being rehabilitated in hostels down there, whether it's for the kiddies who come down and use those facilities. And, you know, I'd love to see a vibrant, working-class community slap bang next to the mall. I'd be happy with that. No problem. I want to see it regenerated, but I don't think that's what they actually want. And I don't actually think that's what's going to happen at the moment. And there are reasons for that. I mean, when you've mentioned the evil word of social housing at the moment, social housing is such a dirty word. You know, you mention it and they're like, oh, it's not possible. It's utopian. Well, you know, I mean, I thought we had after the Second World War, we had a bit of that, didn't we? I mean, didn't we have a bit of that? Now, why can't that be done? It seems to be impossible in this environment. Well, I don't believe it is impossible. I just believe that the way things are going at the moment, particularly with our government, that, you know, and the other parties are all the same, as far as I can tell, that is just not on the agenda. Okay, so, you know, no problem with regeneration, no problem making housing, affordable housing, for people to live in there, no problem with that at all. Really important to stress that, because that is the main argument. And what is the argument? It's about progress. Right? We're backward. We're Luddites. We're trying to stop this great development. Anyway, that's it. Yeah, sure.
Can I make a short point about that? Yeah. When you said the council tries to preserve the facade with old buildings and stuff, the Lakota is actually a historic building. It's, I think, listed, you know, it's 150 years old or something. But they're planning to demolish that and build a huge block of flats there. Now that shows, I think, that they're not actually trying to preserve the facade. They're trying to change the whole character of the area, and they're trying to make lots of money in as short a time as possible. I don't think they even have a plan to preserve the facade. But because they've turned all of that huge Avon office block into flats, and overlooking it, you know, with a kind of gated community thing there, they're now aiming to make the rest of it all fit in with that and to be a sort of playground for people. And they probably wouldn't mind having a few clubs there. But, they want it to harmonise with that. And, yeah. And, you know, they don't want it to be like it.
I think Chris knows it about it.
Well, I didn't hear the second part of that. talk to this chap, but the situation with the Lakota at present is that at the last meeting, Bristol City Council actually forgot to put in their brief, because Bristol City Council Planning Department is in favour of demolition of the whole building and turning it into flats. And the Bentleys, who run, who have put in this application, it is kind of quite a nice scheme, and it's got some generosity in it and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is, it involves knocking down a building of historic interest. And Bristol City Council managed to forget to put the Conservation Area Committee's findings on that building in their brief. Fortunately, I actually had the relevant points on my person at that meeting and read them out. And I think on the back of that, they decided that they were going to defer the final decision to June 6th. Sorry?
June
11th? Is it June 11th? Yeah. I thought it was June 6th. Well, anyway, it's one of those dates. And we are going to be organising a proper presentation of why that building shouldn't be knocked down for that meeting, because it is quite interesting. The big thing that really struck me was the level of apathy amongst the people who had professed an interest in saving the clubs in Stokes Croft, because there are 7,000 people on Facebook mailing list saying keep the clubs, save Clockwork. Of those, 2 people turned up at the meeting.
But Chris, there were 500 out the week before.
Yeah, no, I'm not trying to be negative, but what I'm saying is...
I don't even know about the meeting, because I happened to go to that meeting for another reason.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that this was being discussed, because I just happened to...
Okay, yeah, no, I'm not trying to be negative. What I'm saying is that if we actually are going to stop this process, and I see no reason why we can't stop this process, I see no reason why we can't put an alternative vision for Stokes Croft, an alternative vision for that building as it is, we're going to have to mobilise better than that.
You have these 7,000 people, so you can mail them information about...
That is going
to
be...
You need to sort of organise them.
Yeah, no, but they were all told about that meeting, and I mailed 600 people on our PRSC website, and the actual number of people who turned up were very few. But we now know a little bit more, and you have to register 24 hours before to speak, and actually there were only 2 speakers who spoke against the demolition of the Lakota, and they were, I think, Kingsdown Civic Society and Montpellier Civic Society, which...
Those were the people that were running the club spoke against it.
I think there were only 2 people who stepped up at that meeting as well.
Yeah.
And there were only 2 people who stood up and said don't demolish it.
And the Kingsdown
to be fair, their points were relevant, but they weren't sort of... People who speak a certain way and talk about conservation in a way which is for other people can seem quite exclusive and doesn't really hammer home the point or some of the other points that we could make, I think.
Sure, because people were trying to keep this place open as a club anyway, it was an excellent argument to say that actually this is a historic building. And the developer's argument against that was pretty weak, which was saying, well, it doesn't have the original features, and they don't use it all like it is. Well, that's not really a very good point.
We are going to have to argue it on the building and not on the use, because as Bristol City Council made very clear, the use of the buildings is irrelevant in planning terms. However, I think we can make a strong argument that the very nature of the buildings, and you know, the Bentleys, when they bought that, they bought a warehouse, a vault house, we can argue that the reason Stokes Croft is as it is because of the eclectic nature of the buildings in that area, and that is why we have clubs and we have you know, who knows what we're going to need in 20, 30 years. Maybe we're going to need factories and stuff, because I'm convinced that in 30, 40 years, we're not going to need massive shopping centres. In fact, I think that we can make a very strong and cogent case that we can create an alternative vision for the future in Stokes Croft that is in direct counterpoint to the Cabot Circus development.
Mm, yeah.
And perversely, I think that we can even make the argument and win it that to create a cultural quarter which will be the driving force for what is actually valuable in Bristol, which is the creativity, will be of a massive benefit to the city as a whole. So I think that is the argument that we need to put, so that we're actually selling the idea that it's a fucking great place and you'd be completely mad to knock it down.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. When you talk about the Lakota development, I've been trying to find that phrase. Are you talking about the coroner's court as well? When you talk about Lakota, do you mean the coroner's court and the Lakota?
It's both of them.
It's one site in terms of development.
So what their actual proposition is, and I haven't looked at it in detail, and this was weird. I got involved in this only one day before the planning meeting, because they couldn't find anybody else to rattle on about it.
I only knew about it on the day, otherwise I would have emailed before. Just in case anyone's wondering, by the way, if you ever want to speak at a planning meeting about anything, all you have to do is send an email 24 hours before. That's all you have to do, saying your name and your address.
And your statement if you want to talk. They have to run it.
It can be in brief, but it doesn't have to be everything.
Yeah, your point, basically. But if you try and they give you 3 minutes, and if you go over that, or if you say anything, you know, libelous or anything, then they'll just stop you and you have to sit down. But really quickly, the anti-rave legislation is the reason that the usage of clubs isn't protected, and that came in after the Beanfield. And it was legislated for so that they couldn't protect
clubs. It's a gathering, it's not actually an anti-rave legislation, it's been recently used as to stop raids and so-called illegal gatherings, but it was actually legislation to do with clubs.
What we've actually got there is a real interesting junction of two historic buildings. We've got this ancient malt house and then this rather beautiful looking coroner's court, and it is a beautiful building, and together as a pair they're fantastically beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, just imagine that we could have a school of dance and performance in that building as part of the new cultural area in the centre of our city,
and it would bloody great 19th century warehouse in the centre of the city.
It's just fantastic, and we just need to sell that vision.
One of the interesting things is that they protect the coroner's court, so we couldn't possibly knock that down. And I think this is a case of white collar and blue collar heritage, because they protect the coroner's court and wouldn't have it knocked down, and as you say, it is a beautiful building. But for me, actually, the Malt House is just as beautiful, and it's just as rare, and once you knock it down, it's gone. But there's no understanding of the people who worked there or what those people contributed to that area. I mean, Stokescroft without that massive malt house is unthinkable, because actually it was an entirely working class area run, and the money that was made was, you know, huge profits were made, but that's where people worked, and that's why I think if we could get older people who live in Stokescroft to talk to us about what they remember, because they've seen it change a lot since the war, then that's another kind of strength.
Yeah. Well, I just, right, in terms of protesting, particularly if you talk about, you've got 7,000 on the Facebook link on that, is the council does allow e-petitioning, and it may be, I can quite understand why people don't want to attend council meetings, but maybe putting up an e-petition in support of keeping something on, people may well and link back to your website and the Facebook thing, people may be more prepared to do that and show that, and then that has to be reported to the council.
It is true that we've got to get much more organised. The positive thing is that at the end of May we are going to have a permanent office in Stokescroft in Jamaica Street, which could then be used as a rallying point for all this kind of activity. And that's going to be right. That's going to be
a real problem, I think. You've got to be out there on the street, and you've got to.
I think we're going to need a place to work from, and we've got it's the former super, which is actually closing down, and that is a lot to do with the new Tesco's on the corner, and that will provide a hub for. And then we will find out who wants to get involved and how much time they want to put in, because you know what has been driving it all as, you know, basically...
Green.
The sort of change of the cultural order and all this and pushing that and all the painting it has been, you know, a group of people who've been working far too hard compared to if the load was spread a bit wider, but we will find out. And I also think that we need to, in what we do, create essentially a business plan, because we do live in the real world and we have actually got to come up with ideas. If we're going to sell the idea of preserving this as a cultural quarter, we've actually got to make it pay. We've got to actually make it pay, and we've got to own freeholds. Ultimately, that is what is going to make it stay in perpetuity. I was kind of quite taken. Yeah, no, but that could be part of the process, that you squat them with a view to do it. You squat the bloody thing so well that they're going to look stupid trying to get it back off
all
you.
The cooperative, it's community-minded.
Yeah, and works with quality. Yeah. Does the thing well and not slapdash.
Do a coin street.
Sorry?
Do a coin street.
Coin street.
There's a big development in London, which goes back to the early 80s, where those sort of housing co-op took over, and it's where the Oxo Tower is. Because it's right next to there, it's actually quite a really good bit of real estate. When we got hold of it, it wasn't.
Well, I would love to see us, like we were talking about things going from public ownership into private ownership, I would love to see Westmoreland House and the carriage work come out of private ownership and go into public ownership. And I think if we do it well enough, we can win that case, and we can actually get that as a building that could then be the cultural centre and powerhouse of that.
There's plans already, isn't there, for Westmoreland House? On the lamppost I've seen
Unfortunately, what that actually is the University of West of England final year architecture students were given a project to see what it could be, and the reason that those images are up there.
No, there is a plan application on the.
Yeah. Oh, is there? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's mainly for housing, I think.
Yeah, it is mostly housing, car parking.
It's predominantly, I think, the owners wanting to try and get a planning permission in so that when the council does a CPO, they have to pay higher values, because they'll say we've got a live.
Yeah.
The council's got to make an argument to CPO it. And if they said, well, we've got a real development, we're going to feel that undermines the council's case for CPO. So
we need to get all these guys round the table and thrash it out, actually. We need Comer Homes, we need council, we need South West Regional Development Agency. We have, in the last couple of years, there's been loads of people from different cultural aspects that are all coming into Stoke Croft because it's recognised as being such a hot place. Bridewell, the Invisible Circus, they could easily run the performance aspects of a new cultural centre. With Jamaica Street Art Studios, there's 40 working artists in there. There's Stokes Croft Studios. There's a plethora of graffiti artists. There is such a group of people that could actually run a proper art centre already in place in and around this area. It's a really heady mix. If you dare to dream, it could really... I really do genuinely believe we could make it happen.
Mary, did you...
So that was just a while back. It was only this. It was, excuse me. Not we've moved on actually. It was the contrast between the response of people that we get. We collected on our winter survey in the park. We got 2,300 signatures by actually talking to people in the park and by telling them that there was a website, that there was a petition. We got 800. So this indicates that somehow people will sign up to things like Facebook without actually wanting to bother to get off their bottoms.
Yeah, and that's why it can be easily disregarded.
Yes,
you can send an e-petition to the council
and
solicit the I just to mention, if you don't know about it, these pictures on the walls you might have seen, if you don't know, are of a demonstration that appeared basically in about a week of organising, how long ago was it now? 3 or 4 weeks ago, wasn't it? And it was amazing because there were two demonstrations about gentrification in Stokes Croft planned on the same day by different groups of people who weren't aware of each other. Yeah. So, you know, some of them came through the Facebook thing we were talking about, you know, the 7,000. Other people came you know, from other directions, and there was a demonstration. It was fair, and it was big, I think, for a week's work.
It was time to coincide with things all over Europe.
Well, that was only one part of it. There were hundreds of people who came out who wanted to, you know, to defend clockwork and, you know, to stop them being shut down. But the interesting thing was is that for a Bristol-sized demonstration, it was big, and it came out in a very short space of time. And there clearly is a lot of interest in this. So although I understand about the Facebook argument, you know, we basically put forward the point of view to involve a part of it, but, you know, it's no good being on the internet. I mean, the internet is... I mean, 7,000 people on Facebook is brilliant, but it's nowhere near as good as 1,000 people on the streets. Well, I think that's probably true. I mean, I'm absolutely right. I think you've exposed exactly the point, really.
But I live in the area, and I never heard of these. You know, I live in on the estates, in the area.
I've
got no idea if these are happening.
I'm
regularly on Stoke Croft. I'm there every day. I never, you know, there's no publicity that would be useful.
It's a good point, and what we're going to need to have is a better publicity
machine because
you know, you've got to bear in mind that it's really been very recent, and you know, this whole change in sort of focus on Stokes Croft is relatively recent.
Yeah, I'm very new there. I'd love to get
more. And we're going to have to get more organised. That's why when we get the new office, hopefully we'll have a computer and we'll have a few volunteer website builders so that you will then know what's going to be happening all the time.
It's another step, and it is true that I've
been very much concerned also that we had another group called Transition Montpellier, which started up, which fired off with lots of hullabaloo and loads of emails going out to loads of people, and it collapsed really, really quickly. And so there has been that, you know, on my side, that's sort of like take one little step at a time. And if you try and say that you can do all this and all that, all of a sudden, you can't. You've got to build a process thing gently and slowly. And if you say, you know, if I had 100 volunteers all turned up tomorrow, I wouldn't know what to do with them. You have to build it sort of. Slowly.
Well, I think clearly there's a need for consultation in Dove Street flats anyway, to start as well, you know, because I know there's opposition to clubs there and stuff like that. So, yeah.
You've got brand there, probably.
Well, yeah, I mean, I have to say that it was part, you know, it was purely by accident. It all started when I was just painting the fence for the very first time, and we were thinking we ought to declare ourselves independent from the council because they're so fucking rubbish, you know. We were thinking like Passport to Clinico, Ealing Comedy, all that tooting popular front, and it just kind of evolved into a kind of quite a good concept to hang it all on, really.
You can
do that though,
can't
you? You can declare
an area an independent state, and as such, it's
kind
of
it's
subject to different series of
laws.
I don't think so.
There used to be a street in Shepherd's Bush called Preston Rising, Scottish, and they declared independence, and they made their own stance.
But it helps if you've got your own army.
I'm not very up on all the legislation and stuff. However, you know, we've already got things going on, like the Caesar who used to paint out all the paintings and all the graph. They no longer do that, and this is the only area of the city in which they no longer do that. And that's because whenever they painted out something that was beautiful and of significance, they would always do it badly, and then we would name and shame them, show before and after pictures. And the council now is getting to the point that they really don't want to talk about Stokes Croft because they don't really know how to react to what's going on already, because we're taking voluntarily places like, you know, last weekend there was a there's a next suggestor, a former crack den, which was this deep in all sorts of dungeons, human feces and all sorts of stuff, and all cleaned up. Now there's a 16-foot angel painted up the side of the building, and it's so blatantly and obviously a good thing and better. The council's going like, well, how do we get? Well, we can't tell them off for doing this illegal act. So we're kind of going to have to join in. Well, they could, but I'd be quite happy to go to court and have the time.
We'll have a back, and then should we finish off? I think after Will.
I heard from people who lived and people playing floorboard, jesters, magic box, and clock. Apparently, he's selling to Tesco. Maybe this works.
I spoke to him on Sunday and I asked him straight out that question. And he told me that he is in negotiation with Tesco's with a view to renting the former Jester's Comedy Club out as a Tesco Express. And his justification for that was that he's a businessman and he needs to do that in order to underwrite his Jester's Comedy Club to make it pay, basically. And there may be some truth in that, and actually the arrival of Tesco is directly linked to the fact that there's 300 new flats going up next door. So in a way the battle for Tesco's was probably lost when the 300 flats planning permission went up. You can see at both ends of Stokes Croft this sort of encroachment. So from that end you've got the Tesco's, and then it's going to be moving down that direction. And from the other end, Dighton Street, you can see the students' apartments that are now being built. And if you walk down Dighton Street and then you turn left and walk down where, is it Subway Express is? You can just feel these huge concrete buildings depressing your soul as you go down there. And that is what is coming. And the next piece in the jigsaw is the Lakota. And that is why we have absolutely got to win that planning battle against the Lakota. Is that important?
And it does show that actually they don't really want to preserve the past out of it. And I think they want to get rid of that because it's a symbol of the place and because it's historic. And what they want is a block of anonymous flats just to say, well, we're going to change all this. We're going to sweep it away. So I agree with you. This is important.
You know, they're talking about different ends. You know, they've got a planning proposal for the attic now as well.
I didn't know about that.
Literally went up like last week or the week before. So I'm not sure if it's been, I was going to say that before when you made your point about it being a historic building and like an actual, you know, people have slowly forgotten about that. But the coach house in the attic would have been when people came into Bristol on their horses or with their coaches. That would have been where they stayed. And the attic part of it, which is obviously quite a nice venue now, has just been redone. And they've now got an application to knock the entire thing down and turn that into that as well.
Devalues the coach house as a historic building, and in kind of heritage legislation terms, the coach house itself will not be worth so much. Won't be so easy to say because they consider it out of context and therefore not that valuable. So it's important to maintain all of the buildings that go together.
And like you're saying, that's what edges it in. You know, the attic at the bottom, the Lakota there.
I'm sorry, so, Mr. Butting, because the caretaker
wants to go for a pint.
The caretaker wants to go for a pint, and he's just waved at me, like, and he looks kind of angry. So just quick couple of things. If you, in order to run these events, if you put a little donation in or buy something off the bookstall, that would really help us out. But thanks ever so much for coming. It's been really interesting.